Lost in the Wakefield Triangle by Vin Marsden Hendrick. Inside the rhubarb forcing shed, it was dark. Pitch black, in fact, but much warmer than the chilly November air outside. Martin Chisholm, 36, blonde, carrying a few extra pounds, good sense of humour, idly considered how feasible it would be to have a bit of a lie down. He'd been out in the cold since the late dawn, gathering up and transplanting the rhubarb from the fields behind his sister's farm to the heated shed where the crop would be encouraged to grow at speed through the winter. It was a delicate job, where even the wrong sort of light could have an adverse effect on the quality and tenderness of the rhubarb as it grew. Consequently, the work was performed by the light of a handful of candles spaced out among the rhubarb atop tall iron poles, a necessity that lent a medieval atmosphere to the proceedings. Martin had always been struck by the ritualistic trappings of his work and wondered, not entirely seriously, whether this particular corner of Yorkshire had ever been home to rhubarb worshippers.
I call upon the mercy of crumble, custard and tart.
Yes, he was no historian, but that was a definite possibility. It was the symbolism of snuffing out the last of the candles that had put the idea of sleep into his head. The close, cosy atmosphere was making him nod, and he was, as his dad used to say,
ready for his cot.
He'd have to wait until his sister could give him a lift back into town anyway. Would a quick nap be such a bad idea? The farmhouse would be cold, and his brother-in-law colder. Holding another terse conversation with Brian about his shortcomings didn't appeal. It was so peaceful here in the dark. A swift 40 winks would get him through the rest of the evening. Then he heard a sound. Martin didn't feel like dozing anymore. His misfiring brain struggled to make sense of what could have made that noise. Of course, he'd come to the shed without a torch or matches to relight the candle. That would be too simple. Now he was neither sleepy or curious enough to stay in the dark. He edged through the blackness towards the door. Rather than alarm Martin further, these new tiny explosions of noise reassured him. He realized what was responsible, although he hadn't believed his sister when she'd told him about it. In the darkness, you could hear the rhubarb growing, cracking and snapping as the stalks strained to expand. It had seemed unlikely, but here was the evidence before him. Curious that he hadn't heard anything like it until now, though. Maybe it had taken the warmth of the forcing shed this long to work its magic effect. There was another salvo of cricks and cracks from a different part of the shed. Martin had the eerie notion that he was being surrounded. He started for the door again, only for the loudest crack so far to root him to the spot. He considered calling out, but to whom? Brian and the farmhouse were too far away, and what would he say? He had no idea what was going on. That was when Martin felt the first sting. It was accompanied by a quiet, matter-of-fact pop. He was too shocked to react, but when the second one came, he let out an uninhibited yell. There was no one to hear it, and even if there had been, it was soon drowned out under a cacophony of harsh, snapping sounds. It didn't last long, punctuated with a final, abrupt snap. In the quiet and the dark, Martin had his lie down. It hadn't taken long to reach Forest Farm, a brisk winter walk under a huge sky filled with picture book clouds that followed the doctor, Joe, and the wind along the cobbled road. There were handwritten signs advertising rhubarb on the verge, and there was one attached to a small garden gate that had been left open and was now rusted in place. With no sign of anyone outside, the doctor bounded up the garden path and rapped on the door with the huge brass knocker that hung there. The door was quickly yanked open, as if a visit had been expected, and a ruddy-faced, red-headed woman about the doctor's apparent age rushed forward. She was wearing a farmer's dungarees and Wellingtons, but her clothes were clean. She hadn't been out to work today.
"I'm sorry,"
said the woman, momentarily confused.
"I thought you were the doctor." "He is the doctor,"
said Jo.
"We're here for some rhubarb."
The doctor shushed her and focused his attention on the woman.
"What's wrong? Is someone hurt?" "My brother Martin,"
said the woman.
"Did the hospital send you?"
"Claire, is that the doctor?"
A loud male voice boomed down the hallway from behind the woman, interrupting her.
"What's taken them so long? For goodness sake, let them in."
Distraught and confused by questions from both sides, the woman gladly stepped back and let the doctor take charge of the situation. He followed the voice up two flights of stairs and through the open doorway of a small bedroom, sparsely furnished, with the curtains drawn against the bright winter sun. In one corner stood a spluttering paraffin heater, in the other a tall, broad-shouldered man of middle years. The doctor surmised he must be the source of the voice, stood in a dressing gown.
"Mr. Forrest?"
The man responded to his name and acknowledged the doctor. He nodded in the direction of Martin, wriggling in discomfort beneath the sheets of a small single bed. Sweat had already soaked through the material of his nightshirt. With his eyes clamped shut, he could have been trapped within a nightmare. The doctor rushed forward to examine Martin.
"How long has he been like this?"
he asked.
"We found him this morning, in the forcing shed,"
said Forrest.
"The forcing shed?"
asked Joe aghast.
"For the rhubarb,"
said the doctor.
"Is that where he was working?"
"Last night, yes. But I assumed he'd gone home after his shift. It was only when my wife and I discussed the matter this morning that we thought something might be amiss. We tried ringing him, but he didn't answer. That's when we heard his phone in the shed. At first we thought he was just asleep. He was lying there peacefully, not restless like now. But when he didn't wake up, we started to worry. He started this thrashing business soon after we called you."
It took a moment for the doctor to catch up with the fact that Forrest thought he was from the hospital, and the farmer obviously caught his hesitation. The doctor quickly ploughed on before anything could be made of it. He took a large spotted handkerchief from his pocket and wiped some sweat from Martin's brow. Then he sniffed the hanky tentatively.
"It seems to be some sort of oxalic acid poisoning," he said. "Stronger than you might expect."
Forrest was nearing the end of his patience. If the hospital had sent one of these alternative medicine quacks to spend his taxes, he'd have a great deal to say at the next board meeting.
"Expect? Expect from what?"
he bellowed.
"Rhubarb leaves, Mr. Forrest."
From somewhere, the doctor produced what looked like a stripy sticking plaster and placed it on Martin's forehead. This seemed to calm the poisoned man. Satisfied, the doctor stood up.
"There's something rotten in your rhubarb patch. We better investigate further."
He seemed quite pleased with this course of action, but his face soon creased with irritation as he noticed he'd overlooked something.
"Did anybody see where Joe went?"
Claire caught this as she reached the top of the stairs.
"Is that the name of your friend, the student nurse?"
The doctor didn't even bother to try and disguise his exasperation.
"Yes, that's her. Did you see where she went?"
"I think she went down to the shed. She certainly seemed interested in it when I told her what happened to Martin."
The doctor closed his eyes and took a deep breath.
"Would you excuse me, please?"
The second Claire moved out of the way, the doctor hurtled down the stairs, jumping down the last half dozen or so and nearly banging his head on the ceiling. Claire raised her eyebrows and followed. There was no light, candle or otherwise, within the shed. When the doctor burst through the door, he stepped into solid blackness the moment he crossed the threshold.
"Joe? Joe, are you there?"
No reply.
This could be tricky,"
said the doctor, a disembodied voice in the dark.
"Whoever is hiding in here is obviously generating some sort of light-suppressing gravity wave. Torchlight's too heavy to shine."
If Claire thought that sounded like nonsense, she didn't let on.
"Is your friend hand in there?"
she called from the doorway.
"Impossible to tell," replied the doctor.
"Hello. I seem to have found some sort of metal rod stuck in the ground."
"That's one of the candle poles,"
said Claire.
"Yes, I found the candle on top. Excellent. I've got some matches somewhere."
By now, Mr. Forrest had arrived, fully dressed and with the intention of walking straight into the shed.
"No, Brian, stay here. It's not safe,"
warned Claire, taking his arm.
"What on earth are you talking about?"
said Forrest, pulling away.
"Don't worry. They're in here somewhere,"
said the doctor's voice, still searching for his matches.
"Brian, so help me, if you don't listen to me this time, I'm getting hold of Martin and leaving,"
said Claire.
"They're everlasting ones,"
continued the doctor,
"so they should be able to overcome the gravity wave. Now, where are they?"
Slowly, deliberately, Forrest took the torch from his wife and walked into the shed. From outside the impossible darkness, he couldn't see her go.
"Doctor, where are you? The torch is packed in,"
cried Forrest.
"Mr. Forrest, don't move,"
called out the doctor.
"I'll have this place lit in a moment." "Did you step on something, Mr. Forrest?"
"No, that's the sound of the rhubarb growing,"
replied the farmer.
"It's nothing to worry about. You can hear it every now and then."
"Fascinating," said the doctor.
"I wonder if..." "Every now and then?"
queried the doctor.
"I don't understand,"
said Forrest. The snapping became more rapid and louder as the doctor finally found his matches. Fumbling, he lit one and brought it to the candle he had found. It caught first time, and soon there was a small ball of milky yellow light hovering in the middle of the shed. The cracking sound ceased. The doctor uprooted the candle pole and beckoned the now visible farmer to come fully into the light.
"Take a look at what's invaded your shed, Mr. Forrest," said the doctor.
He tilted the pole towards the ground until a most peculiar sight was revealed. There, surrounded on all sides by overgrown rhubarb, swaying and undulating in an undetectable breeze, was a red metal bug about the size of a cat. As the candle drew near, it rose up on its hind legs and hissed. At first, the noise sounded like a threat or warning, but it wobbled and modulated and eventually transformed into what was actually a bout of high-pitched static. This soon became white noise before disappearing somewhere into the ultrasonic, leaving the doctor and Forrest with an unpleasant ringing in their ears. Then the bug spoke.
"Please keep probe from extreme light, heat or emptiness,"
rang out a tinny synthesized voice.
"This unit will not function in extra spatial circumstances."
"I beg your pardon," exclaimed a puzzled doctor.
"We claim this territory by right of conquest. This world belongs to us now."
The attending rhubarb performed a small Mexican wave, as if to show its approval of this development.
"The world?"
spat Forrest incredulously.
"You want to take over the whole world?"
"Correction,"
buzzed the bug.
"Translation error 87%. Correct term, shed. Message should read, this shed belongs to us now."
"Now that sounds altogether more reasonable," said the doctor. "Can we discuss all this over a cup of tea?"
Later, Jo came strolling down the lane leading from the village to the farm. She caught the doctor leaning on the garden gate, experimenting with a small stick of rhubarb in his lapel.
"Doesn't quite work, does it?"
queried the doctor rhetorically.
"It seems to be a bit too garish to me. Oh, well."
He placed the stalk back in the carrier bag of rhubarb he'd bought from Mr. Forrest.
"What happened to you? I was worried that you'd been attacked."
Jo looked bashful.
"I took the opportunity to eliminate some other suspicious-looking buildings from our inquiries,"
she said. The doctor smiled at her, clearly not convinced. Joe smiled back.
Okay, I admit it. I forgot to ask which one was the forcing shed. What did I miss? A very interesting piece of interplanetary commerce, as it happens. Agrophobic micro-aliens from a compact dimension take a forced rhubarb shed by force and then enter into a trade agreement with the estranged farmer that was the former owner. He provides them with all the manure they need, and they give him the tenderest rhubarb in the galaxy, grown at a rate unheard of on Earth. Isn't that a bit irresponsible?
Said Joe.
Allowing potentially dangerous aliens to set up shop on Earth, is it? All they want is somewhere warm and dark to live. Once they have that, they don't seem to want to do much else. They have drone bugs to do all their manual work, and apart from a propensity to drive rhubarb wild, they're pretty harmless.
You're saying the rhubarb attacking that man was just a side effect?
Asked Joe. The doctor considered this.
I'm saying we've got the ingredients to make a near-perfect rhubarb Charlotte. And for now, I think that's enough.